Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello everyone, and welcome, and thank you for listening to the latest episode of Borders Blatherings, our little podcast where Mary Craig and I have a chat and shine a light, we feel, on the curious, shadowy, and often very magical history of the Scottish Borders region. How are you today, Mary?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to be out of the soggy rain we're having at this time of year.
It is. The weather's not so bad at the moment, although it has been very, very cold. But hey, we're not suffering.
Indeed.
Compared to many in the world.
Are you well yourself?
Not too bad. I was off work for a few days, but now, last week, I started working again. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what I'd like to talk to you about today is related to my work as a language trainer.
Oh, okay.
Now, you'll know the days of face-to-face training with a big group sitting around in a conference centre down near London. They've gone for me.
Okay.
And I'm doing everything now on virtual training.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not going to mention any company names, but right. You'll know the thing. You know the setup. You and I did that during COVID. We talked to each other over our computers.
Yep.
Screen, headset, microphone, and little pictures of the other people that you're staring at. Head and shoulders.
Yes.
With quaint little screensavers behind. These days I've been choosing one with a roaring fire in the background to make me feel warm. However, although the suppliers of the technology I use tell me how wonderful it is, a couple of times recently, working with groups, I've had a few technical issues.
Mm-hmm.
Camera going wrong. Mm. Not able to accept an invitation to a virtual meeting. Microphone problems. Live captions appearing when I didn't want them to.
Mm-hmm.
And on a couple of occasions, I've referred to myself as I'm a real Luddite.
Ah, yes.
Now, because the training is for business English, some of them go, Doug, when you say Luddite, what exactly do you mean? Which I think, good clarification technique. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. And I've given them a potted history of the Luddite movement.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to talk about today.
Ah, yes.
In a sense.
Yes.
We've been doing this a while now, but some months ago, we did a couple of podcasts on the coming of the railways to this region.
Yes.
And the rise of the cotton mills.
And the rise of the mills, absolutely.
So on reflection, after these sessions where I caught myself a Luddite, and I shouldn't have used that term, it's quite derogatory, really, in my opinion, I thought, there's something to ask Mary about. Did we see, because history teachers will tell you, this all kicks off in Nottingham and so on and so forth, and it's seen as an English issue.
Yes.
I remember different stories. My first thought for you, Mary, was, did any kind of Luddite type industrial espionage or action take place here in the Scottish Borders? As the mills began to expand, then we became a centre for the textile industry.
Yes, there was Luddite activity up here. It was done slightly differently from that in Nottingham, and differently from the Luddite activity I know that took place in Paisley predominantly, and in some in Glasgow as well. But yes, there was Luddite activity down in the border mills, absolutely.
Well, let's start then with the part of the world you hail from. I was reflecting about this as a topic to talk to you about, but it also took me back to my high school days, which were a year or two ago. But I did have, at high school, a history teacher that I really admired, because he, Talbot, Mr. Talbot, he used to go beyond, shall we say, the set curriculum. He talked about the Tall Puddle Martyrs, for example, but he was happy to talk to us about the Luddites, and rather suggested to us that a lot of this industrial action actually kicked off in the west coast of Scotland.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, this led to the, not directly to the formation of unions, but it was the croppers and the cotton weavers who began to show some animosity towards the emerging technology that was being installed in the factory.
Yes,
does that ring a bell?
Yes, it was the croppers, and it's interesting because most people have heard of spinning and weaving. Very few people have actually heard of cropping.
Yeah,
but it was a vital part of the trade. It was croppers who really led the Luddite activity, if we're going to call it that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Are you happy if we call this group of people Luddites?
Yes, because that's what they call themselves.
Uh-huh. Because if I'm correct, and you will correct me if I'm wrong, there was in fact no Ned Ludd. He's some kind of composite figure, because we all need a leader and so on. Is that correct?
Yes.
In the early line, there is no Ned Ludd.
He's made up, if you like. He's like a Robin Hood or a King Arthur. Yes, he's a composite lad is Ludd.
Okay. Before we get into any of the industrial unrest that happened here in the Borders, let me ask you a direct question. It's not too binary, but why is it that children are taught about the Tall Puddle Martyrs, who are agricultural workers?
Mm-hmm.
Clues in the name, they were martyrs. But often the Luddites are kind of airbrushed out of history.
Yes.
How does that come about?
Yeah, I think it's because of capitalism. The Tall Puddle Martyrs were seen as rural workers who were trying to resist changes in the agricultural ways, and we're all very nostalgic. We have a very bad habit in Britain of thinking that everything that happened 50 years previously was the golden era, although there never has been a golden era.
Not quite.
But anything to do with industry is very much progress, is looking forward, and the Luddites were seen as holding that back.
Yeah.
So I think that's why Tall Puddle Martyrs, good guys, such a shame, fighting for the beautiful countryside, Luddites getting in the way of progress, getting in the way of empire, getting in the way of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why.
So on the one hand, we have people who history now looks upon as martyrs, which suggests an ex-cosy feeling. And yet we have Luddites portrayed, if they are mentioned, as machine breakers, vandals.
Yes. And of course it's a derogatory term. People say, oh, you're an absolute Luddite. Why can't you work your computer or your tablet or your whichever piece of electronic equipment it is? Yeah. Yeah, it's still used in that way.
So what kind of things did happen here in this area before we perhaps take the story a little bit further afield?
Well, in the Borders, as I say, there's spinning, there's weaving, and there's cropping.
Uh-huh.
So if you think about it, before you have the Manufacturers Association in 1777 is set up in Galashiels. So before that, people have been spinning and making cloth at home for millennia. That's
it's
what people
do. It's a cottage
industry.
It
was literally a cottage industry. You know, the kids would do the carding, the women would do the spinning, and the men would do the weaving.
Yeah.
And then there were men that did what was called cropping. And cropping was cutting the nap of the cloth to make it smooth so that it isn't rough against your skin.
Mm.
And it's a very, very skilled thing to do, because depending on how close you cut it depends on where the nap's lying, and you're using big, heavy shears that weigh something like 25, 30 kilograms. It's a very, very skilled industry.
So it's kind of the opposite of teasing.
Instead
of teasing the yarn out, you're flattening it.
You're flattening it trimming it.
Yeah.
Trimming it, okay? And as the manufacturers' associations in the Border set up, so more and more people are going into the mills, because you can get these big spinning machines and you get these big weaving machines.
Yeah.
What you end up with is you end up with two or three men getting together and creating what were known as cropping shops. So they were independent of the Manufacturers Association, which the Manufacturers Association did not like, thank you very much. But these were artisan workers, so they would set up, and they would be sort of like, you know, four or five of them would set up, and they'd set up their shop, and they would get the material in from the big mills. They would crop the material, it would then go back to the mill to be sent out to make dresses and skirts and jackets and all the rest of it.
It's a kind of outsourcing situation. Yeah.
Because although there were cropping machines that were invented and they were developed more and more, actual cropping is a skill because you might say, well, here's a batch of cloth and I want it close cropped. Here's another batch of cloth. I want a longer nap on that. Because the cloth is being used for different things.
Yeah.
And the basic machines that were first set up were very, very crude and they could only do one cut.
Yeah.
And that was it. So you had these cropping shops and they were very specialised and they would take in young lads for apprenticeships and they were often family affairs. You get, you know, a father, a couple of sons, maybe some cousins in there. And they were really, they were the artisans. They were at the top of the field. You know, they were absolutely there with the weavers. So that was really what they were doing. And then, of course, people kept inventing things, you know, the spinning jenny and the stocking frame, and then cropping machines started to be invented, and then they got better. And the thing is that a cropping machine could do in a day what a man could do in a week.
Yeah.
And the Manufacturers Association thought to themselves, well, why am I sending my material out to these cropping shops? I can just do it in-house with some guy. Doesn't even need to be a cropper. Just some guy who can work a machine with a couple of kids.
The machine will do the work. Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the croppers realised that their way of life was going. And so they did. They would sabotage the machines. So they would break in. And they were very particular in what they did. They weren't vandals. They weren't mindless thugs. They would break into... into mills, they would go to only the cropping machines. They didn't affect the weaving machines and the spinning machines because that would put weavers and spinners out of work. They targeted the cropping machines and they would break the cropping machines. And then they would leave. That was it. That's all they were doing. They were protecting their way of life.
Yeah.
Of course, the Manufacturers Association doesn't like this. And at the same time, this had sort of kicked off in Paisley and Glasgow. It kicked off in the Borders. Kicked off in Lancashire and Nottingham.
Yeah.
And there was a particular magistrate in Nottingham whose name was Gerardson. And he was a particular pain in the tonsils. Anyway, he decided that what he wanted to do was he wanted to form a militia. So he puts pressure on his local MP. His local MP goes to the Home Office, which had only actually just been set up as a government department, and said, this is awful, and they're all running amok, and oh, they're scaring the women and children, and you know, which was rubbish, but oh, it's awful. It's awful.
But we know the story.
As usual. And the Militia Act was reformed and reintroduced. So Gerardson gets to set up a militia. So he has a militia of basically local soldiers who go out to beat up Luddites. Well, the minute you do that, the Luddites start to fight back. The trouble is that every other magistrate around Britain went, oh, I can have a militia as well.
Yeah, yeah,
Thank you very much. So guess what? You've got a militia in Galashiels and Selkirk and Hoyt and Mel and everywhere else. And so then it becomes violence. So... Now, the Luddites fought back. The croppers absolutely fought back. But it was the militia that started it by coming down really, really heavily. And then, of course, the Luddites get arrested. They're arrested for damaging the machines in the mills. But then they're also arrested for fighting in the streets and for assaulting an officer of the crown. So what had started with you going in and bashing a machine in now becomes a situation where you're going to get transported to Australia. Because you've attacked a member of the Crown, because the militia were members of the Crown in that way because of the way the Act had gone through. And so you get a huge rush of people, you get violence coming up, you get people being transported, and it becomes a really, really vicious cycle of fighting. But then, of course, in the Borders, because border towns are quite small, and because there are so many mills, you know, you've got a town like Galashiels, it's got 30-odd mills.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody knows everybody. So if you get arrested, even if you don't get sent to Australia, everybody knows who you are. So the cropping shops don't get any business anymore. The wives are put out of the mill cottages. And cropping within a generation has gone as an occupation. And it's gone to such an extent where most people don't even know that cropping was a thing. It was an occupation. It was a way of life.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
It's really interesting, and your comprehensive, may I say, outline of that. It begs a question from me, which is this. You mentioned that croppers were skilled.
Yes.
Highly skilled artisans.
Highly skilled artisan workers, yes.
So, I don't really like tofu or avocado, or I don't wear sandals, but maybe I'm woke. But was there not another way of going forward with this? Why would the industrialists not have used the knowledge of the croppers?
Because it was purely the amount of money that
it's just
could
profit
be made.
Motive.
It was
yeah.
purely profit motive on the side of the mill owners. The problem is my favourite bogeyman, the Church of Scotland, then gets involved.
Well done getting that in.
Oh, I can get it in everywhere. The problem,
tell us about it.
The problem is that the mill owners don't like the Luddites because they're losing money.
Yeah.
You know, right? The Luddites, initially, the croppers had people's sympathy because people looked at it and thought, well, no, that's Jimmy's job or that's Davy's job sort of type thing, you see? So the mill owners have a bit of a problem because the general sympathy is with the croppers, it's with the Luddites, because this is, the Industrial Revolution is now at the stage where lots of very rich people are making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And lots of ordinary people are not making any money. And lots of very rich people are living in very rich houses. And lots of ordinary people are living in ordinary houses. So that wealth gap.
Adam Smith's getting a lot of statues built on his behalf.
You know. And you can see it in the borders to this day. You go through and you can see the mill workers' houses. And you can see the mill owners' houses.
Yep, yep.
So all the sympathy is on the side of the Luddites, if you like, until the mill owners decide to push back. And they decide to put a little bit of propaganda out there as if to say, well, you see, these croppers and Luddites, they are attacking us and we're their social superiors. That's not right, is it? Because if they're the sort of people that can come into a mill at night and break property, well, that's the sort of person that might steal something from the church.
Yeah.
And most of the mill owners are the sorts of guys that donate to the Church of Scotland. So the Church of Scotland decides to get it on the act and starts to say things like, thou shalt not steal, and envy and jealousy are one of the seven deadly sins, and these Luddites, well, actually, they should just go and get another skill, and because this attack on authority, what if they decide to attack the authority of the church? Oh, we don't like that. And so the church starts to sort of move from being sympathetic to ordinary people to moving over to being sympathetic towards the mill owners.
And in the early 19th century, the church still holds sway.
Exactly.
In many corridors.
Exactly.
You know.
And as the century moves on, where you have a lot of other congregations coming up, the Methodists are coming up, the Baptists are coming up, the United Presbyterians are coming up. The Church of Scotland had gone through the Great Disruption in 1843 when the wee Free Church had been formed in Scotland.
Yeah,
so the Kirk
yeah.
of Scotland is feeling a bit wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
And also it gets bigger donations from mill owners than it does from mill workers. So whose side is it going to be on? You see, so they move over, and that's when the croppers are not known as croppers trying to save their livelihood. They're now Luddites.
They're Luddites.
They
machine breakers.
Anti-authority.
Yeah.
They're machine
yeah.
breakers.
Troublemakers.
And troublemakers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they fight in the street. And oh yeah. my, they get drunk on a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And so the church starts to turn against them. And when the church turns against them, although that causes resentment in the local population, there's not a lot else you can do if the church is against you mm-hmm. and the mill owner's against you. You can't really put your head above the parapet, or you might lose your job as a weaver or a spinner.
You love being on that soapbox of yours. But, you know, so again, we have the Church of Scotland that's getting into bed, not only with plantation and slave owners, but with mill owners, with industrialists, with rich... Yep, yep.
Yes.
I get that. I'm interested in your vocabulary. During what you were describing there, you've said that it was a job for the croppers, again,
mm.
and a way of life.
Yes.
That's important.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Because they had pride in what they were
yeah.
doing.
Yeah.
And it did harken back to the days when, as mm-hmm. I say, a child would card, a woman would spin, a man would weave.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't work. This was another thing, is they didn't work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, mm-hmm. in the mill.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't work to the clock. They got up. They were artisans. They worked when they wanted to work, and when
Indeed.
They didn't want to work, they didn't want to work. And
mm-hmm.
they rested. And cropping shops tended to be very open. They had big windows. The windows were open. There was a lot of ventilation because obviously as you're cutting material, there's dust and fluff coming off the material. They were the opposite of what the mills were. They were not noisy. They were not hot. There wasn't the fire risk that there often was. There weren't children getting their fingers trapped in machinery or anything like that. It was the exact opposite of what was being done. And also the fact that they were their own masters really rankled with the Manufacturers Association, but it rankled also with the church. Because they were their own masters and because they were relatively well paid, they were also educated and they were literate. And they could read their Bible and they could think for themselves and they could think things like, well, maybe we should resurrect the old guilds, the old medieval guilds that used to exist.
Maybe
we should be picking up on this. And actually, why can't we vote in the Parliament? Could we have a wee discussion about that? Thank you very much. You know, and people say, well, it's nothing to do with you. Well, maybe the Reform Act should be brought in. Maybe some of us should be able to get the vote.
Yeah.
And so they start pushing at that and pushing at that. And then, strangely enough, they get support from the Liberal Party. Or the Whigs.
The Whigs,
as they were. Because, of course, now the Whigs didn't give two hoots. Well, sorry, this is very unfair of me. Sweeping generalisations. I think that the majority of Whigs didn't give two hoots about the majority of croppers. But it was convenient for them to side with the croppers against the Tories.
Political position.
And so they would push on that.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
The legacy of that is that the Borders part of Scotland is frequently voting in Liberal MPs and MSPs because of that support that they got given. Because the Whigs wanted the Reform Act to be pushed through, because they wanted to support these men, because they wanted those men's votes. It put the Liberals and the Church of Scotland, or the Whigs and the Church of Scotland, at odds with each other for quite a while. And the Whig Party often would support people like the United Presbyterians and the Methodists and the Baptists. So there was a nice little nexus of political backstabbing going on there. But unfortunately, it was the croppers that lost out, because eventually they just couldn't compete against more and more of these machines that were being made and refined. And eventually their jobs just went. And as I say, as if you have a cropping shop of, say, 7 men, and all you need to do is take 2 of those senior men out and transport them to Australia, and you haven't got the senior guys, you haven't got the guys with experience in there. Because they would pick off the older guys. Younger guys who were arrested tended to be fined and sent to prison. The older guys were deliberately transported to Australia, and those skills were lost. And so the cropping shops fell away, and within, as I say, 25 years, cropping had gone.
Hello, my name is Alison Larkin, and I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of the Jane Austen podcast. This podcast brings Jane Austen's stories to the 21st century, along with commentary from me and conversations with fascinating people who all share a love of Jane Austen. And of course, we had to start with none other than Pride and Prejudice. So join me as we embark on a journey through some of the most wonderful stories I know. The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
For me, it's fascinating because even personal experience, I remember when I worked 16 careers ago, when I worked as an industrial engineer in a company, time and motion, you know, time study and stuff like that. I can remember these old guys working in, I think it was a router shop. And when the standard was shine it till you can see your face in it.
Okay.
They were highly motivated, skilled workers.
Yeah.
But when the consultants came along and imposed standards on the job, like plus or minus 1.5 microns, they lost the entire joy of the job.
Yes.
They lost control of that
job.
Yes,
yes.
And here we see a similar thing, but this happened in the 70s.
Yes, yes.
Here in Scotland. So
yeah.
What are we learning from all of this?
Yes.
And today we have, in a sense, parallels with the introduction of AI in Hollywood and all the strikes where people are fighting for their jobs.
Yes.
We lose our lifestyle. We lose our creativity.
Yes.
You know, don't worry about that. We'll put Rishi Sunak and Elon Musk on a stage together and everything will be fine.
Yes.
You know,
because if you think about it, if you're a weaver, and don't get me wrong, being a weaver is a skilled job. It absolutely is a skilled job. But you are told, you know, you're at your loom for 12 hours a day and you're producing, I don't know, a green tartan. And that's what you're producing for the month because that is what the manufacturer wants you to do. That's fine. It's the machine that's sort of doing all the work. Yes, you absolutely have to set it up and all the rest of it. And I'm not decrying that at all. But there's an awful lot that is done by machine. But once that material goes into a cropping shop, they turn the material, they look at the material, they have pride in that material. They would often decide how close a crop would be given. You know, the manufacturer might come in and say, I want this close crop. And they say, well, actually, this piece of cloth, you'd be better with this. But all that went.
That's my point. Why did they not use the knowledge and the skill of the croppers
and
take a partnership view of the situation?
Yes.
No, let's threaten them.
Let's threaten them, and it was lost. And as I say, there were men who were transported to Australia for life. And of course, once they were gone, their wives were then in the mill earning very little, probably in the spinning sheds or the weaving sheds. You know, their children who might have gone in to become a cropper themselves, all of those gifts were gone. All of that artisan work was gone. And it held back the development of the trade unions in this area for a long time.
Yeah.
Because again, you're picking off the troublemakers. You're picking off the sort of men that can argue back with you. You're picking off the sort of men that are articulate, who read their newspaper, who read their Bible, who can argue back with you. So you get rid of them, you keep the young lads who are maybe just wanting to, you know, do their job and have a couple of drinks of an evening and chat up the girls. That's the lads you leave behind. They're much more easily manipulated, or somebody who's got 8 kids, you can put pressure on him financially.
But and you can attach stigma. Yes. Always a good weapon.
And then, if you then have the church in the pulpit saying,
you got it,
you are breaking these machines, that isn't your property, that's tantamount to theft, you're just jealous and envious of what's going on, these are sinful things, you should respect authority, you're not doing that, then the middle classes all get really worried about you, and you stop from being croppers trying to cling on to your way of life, to being nasty Luddites, and they're wanting the vote. What do they want to vote for? Mm. What are they going to vote for? And the propaganda just start drip.
My limited knowledge of the origin and development growth of the Labour Party and the trade union movement is such that while the Toll Puddle Martyrs that we talked about earlier, which I was indoctrinated with at high school, although they are very much seen as an integral part of the growth of the Labour Party and the trade union movement, the Luddites have been kind of, as I said earlier, airbrushed
Yeah, they're sort of pushed to the side.
Yeah.
Because they're awkward because you can't really say that they achieved that much. I mean, the Reform Act went through because the Whigs pushed it through.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't the workers. Mm. Because they were so easily broken by being transported. I mean, a lot of them did try. They would talk about having combinations. That was what they called them. They didn't call them unions or guilds. They called them combinations where they would combine together.
Yeah.
But they were very loose in what they did. Mm. I mean, they weren't looking to form unions to protect workers' rights. They had their backs against the walls and were desperately trying to fight to survive. So it wasn't that they were getting up in the morning thinking, how can we improve things for workers? They were getting up in the morning going, how can I feed my family this week if I lose my job? Yeah. It was desperation. So, yes, they fought for workers' rights, but it was their own livelihoods they were fighting for as opposed to developing what they would have wanted to have done. And as you say, if the manufacturers had worked with them, then they probably would have picked up on the old medieval guilds and developed that into an early form of the trade union. Yeah.
And being airbrushed out is interesting because even the vocabulary, because anyone listening to this, be they in America or whatever, they will know spinner, weaver, cropper.
Cropper, yeah.
That may well be. Well, he came a cropper.
Yeah. Or you think of farming, you think of crops, you think, oh, what's that?
Exactly that.
Where you are cropping the cloth and giving it that finish.
Yeah.
And giving it that nut. And yet, I mean, anybody who's ever, if you ever have the money to buy a handmade suit, a Savile Row suit, if you go to a proper tailor's, they will talk about the nap of the material and they will talk about all of these things. And it really makes a difference. And I mean, it's all done by machine now, but the hand cropping was a real skill. And I mean, there were croppers in the borders, in Paisley, Glasgow, and Nottingham, and Lancashire, Yorkshire, these sorts of places, sent over to Australia, and just, that was it. They were transported for life.
Mm.
They hadn't murdered anybody, but they had, you know, they'd maybe punched a sergeant in the street, which I'm not suggesting you should go and punch sergeants in the street, but I don't quite think that's transportation for life. But that's what it was done because the Militia Act had gone through, because they were, you know, agents of the Crown.
Mm.
It then elevated you punching. If the sergeant punched you, that was okay. But for you to punch the sergeant, that was sent off. I mean, there were some Luddites who were very forward-thinking, and they did say things like, we should talk about workers' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And we should look at the Reform Act, and we do want, you know, to be able to have our own members of Parliament. But basically, they were just desperate because it had happened so quickly.
Yeah.
That's the difference between the spinning jenny and the stocking frames and the flying shuttles. They had all been gradual developments.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because weaving and spinning were still jobs that you could do, and because the Manufacturers Association had built so many mills, weavers and spinners weren't under threat the way the croppers were. And that was the difference. And it was a slight divide between those two communities, which again, obviously the manufacturers and the church was saying, well, you know, you're good, honest weavers and you go to work for 12 hours. And they would say things like, you know, you're in the mill for 12 hours. Those croppers only work 5 hours a day. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, just like these train drivers.
I know.
the church and the capitalists, the free marketeers will divide and rule whenever they can. They will jump on any bandwagon.
Every time, yes. Yeah. And although, as I say, the Whigs did support them, purely
opportunism.
Pure opportunism. But it is interesting that the Liberal vote has remained as that legacy within the borders.
It is thanks to Mr. Tarbert, a history teacher from a long, long time ago, I shan't mention how long, that I knew about the croppers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's thanks to you today that I now have an understanding of the Church of Scotland's role in
Every time.
And I didn't set it up, so you had the chance to get on your soapbox. That is, I did not know about that.
Yes.
Before we finish, Mary, are there any juicy stories about industrial action or protests in this particular part of the world that you have in the archive?
Well, there's a fun one for you as you live in Stow, is about a chap called McClelland, and he was actually thrown out of Stow Mill for being a scoundrel vagabond from Glasgow. And
from Glatawiji.
These were chance because, of course, the thing was that because Glasgow had the heavy industries of shipbuilding, it's much more easy to organise labour at that point because it wasn't a case of you losing your livelihood. It was a case of, I want better paying conditions and I can hold this to ransom. And so often what you would get is you would get political agitators from Glasgow who would come out and would come down to places like the borders, much as you would get political agitators from like Liverpool and Manchester going out into the mills down in that direction. So we have a few notes of that, and there are a sort of letters to the paper. It's outrageous that these political agitators from Glasgow, it was always Glasgow, there didn't seem to be anybody coming from Edinburgh or anybody else.
I made no comment.
this seemed to be the thing, and the church again would rail about this, about these Glaswegians turning up and getting drunk. They were obsessed with drink on a Saturday night and
not going to the kirk on a Sunday.
Absolutely,
you
know, you see. So there was lots of that. There was lots of, you know, upset people sort of, you know, writing into the newspapers and fulminating about what was going on. And the thing is that most people would never have met a Luddite. Because, first of all, they would break the machines at night.
Yes.
They were not riotous. There weren't hundreds of croppers. There were lots of weavers and lots of spinners. There weren't hundreds and hundreds of croppers all the way across the borders. There were very few of them. They only ever broke into mills at night. They only ever broke the cropping machines. They didn't touch the weaving machines or the spinning looms or anything like that. They tried not to break indoors where they could get away with it. Some of them, would you believe, broke into mills, broke the cropping machine, and then left the money to repair the door that they had broken through because that wasn't what they were trying to do. They didn't get particularly drunk any more than anybody else got particularly drunk. They weren't riotous in church. They weren't causing bother in the streets. So the vast majority of people would never even have known about it. But for the fact that the Manufacturers Association, as far as they were concerned, it was revolution, it was the end of the world, as they knew it. You know, they were, some of them were genuinely frightened, but most of them were absolutely exaggerating it.
So there's almost, to use a ridiculous phrase, but there's almost part of this is a Gandhi-esque type protest. It's passive resistance in a way. They're leaving money for the repair.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Yes, and interestingly, I think we've spoken about this before, is that in 1931, when Gandhi was at the height of his Quit India campaign, he visited the cotton mills in Lancashire because he had said to the people of India, and it's the reason there's a spinning wheel in the centre of the Indian flag to this day, why are we spinning cotton that then gets sent to Britain to, and then cloth comes back to us and we've got to buy it at a ridiculous price? Let's not do this. But he was aware that that would affect cotton manufacturers in Britain. So in 1931, he came across and he toured the Lancashire cotton mills. And there's these fantastic photographs of him and his, with his bare legs and his little sandals on and all these doughty sort of cotton worker women, and, you know. And he explained to them what was happening and they agreed with him, much to the upset of the government.
Yep.
And then once the cotton mill workers had agreed to him, the woolen mill workers agreed to him, and the workers in the borders agreed as well. So the government was sort of caught in a pincer movement of Indians in India saying, quit India, and then ordinary cotton workers and woolen weaver workers in Britain saying, yeah, you should quit India as well. And that spread. So, yes, it's interesting that you mentioned Gandhi there.
I could only think of Gandhi-esque. You mentioned someone called John McClelland, did you say? John McClelland?
Yes.
That was kicked out of a pub?
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit more about he.
Well, we're not quite sure. We don't think that's his real name. Here we go again.
Okay.
Probably from Glasgow. He was a political agitator. He was a pamphleteer. He was a weaver, so he could get jobs. We've got note of him in the Stow Mill, in the Laddock Mill in Gala, and one of the mills in Selkirk, I don't know the name of. And he turns up as a journeyman weaver. And because of all of the disruption, mills were taking people on just as they could, and he would pitch up. And then after a couple of months, they realised that what he was doing was he was talking agitation, he was talking political agitation Lots of pamphlets were found, leaflets talking about workers' rights, talking about the Reform Act, scandalously whether or not women should have the vote. And this is 100 years before the suffragettes are up and running. And then he sort of disappears and we're not quite sure where he ends up. But as I say, because we're not sure of his name.
But he resided here in the village for a period of time.
He must have done. He must have lived in Stow, because he was certainly employed in Stow Mill.
Yeah.
As I say, the Laddock Mill and Gala Shields as well, and definitely one in Selkirk. Which is interesting that after being chucked out of Stow Mill for being an agitator, he managed to get work in the Laddock Mill.
Yeah.
I can only assume that those two mill owners weren't talking to each other.
Or they were that desperate for
Or they were
that
desperate
workers.
For staff, or I don't quite know. Or maybe he, I mean, he definitely, with those two mills, he was working under the same name that I'm aware of. But there was so much agitation going on at the time that people were chopping and changing jobs a lot, you know.
There is something a touch ironic about that. So the mill owners have all the new technology and machines that they need.
Yes.
But they have a problem getting workers.
They have a problem because the workers are the weavers and the spinners are unsettled by what the croppers are doing. And obviously, the other problem is that if you're creating material, if you're producing cloth, and the croppers have just broken the cropping machine, what do you do with it? What do you do with all this material?
It's unfinished. Yeah.
It's unfinished. Yeah. You've got to sit there. So the manufacturer has to, or the mill owner, sorry, has to go and find somebody to come in and fix the cropping machine. Well, what if he can't? You then have to buy in another cropping machine. Well, what if you can't do that? Mm. Meanwhile, those looms are still going.
Yeah.
So what do you do? Are you just continuing to produce cloth and leaving it piled up at the back of the factory? Have you got room for it? Or do you start laying off some of your weavers and put them on short time until you get a cropping machine in? That's going to upset the weavers. And what if the weavers decide to go to another mill? So it is actually quite disruptive, not just the breaking of the machine.
Yeah.
Because the cropping machines, they're big, they're expensive, and the person that you employed to work the cropping machine, now the machine's broken, what do you do with him? Is he unemployed now? Does he get paid a wage? Of course not. So he's unemployed.
You're taking me back to the early days of what was the EEC, Treaty of Rome, where we had, do you remember?
Oh,
wine legs
and butter mountains.
Indeed.
And the thing is that, all joking aside, that's a big problem because the woolen mills in the borders, wool is an oily, greasy material because
smelly.
It's a natural material that comes from the animal. The fire risk. You've got these machines that are clattering away all the day. You've got all this oil, you've got candlelight, you've got lanterns, you've got kerosene, and now you've got an entire pile of material up the back that's combustible material. So that, this is not good. People are then worried about that sort of idea. There's also the fact that if your cropping machines get broken into or broken two or three times, or your mill gets broken into two or three times, the insurance company doesn't pay out. So then that becomes another issue, and then that becomes something else that you can shout about, the fact that you're not getting your insurance paid. And if you're not getting the insurance paid and you're not being able to sell your cloth, you can't go to market, so you don't give as much money to the Kirk of Scotland. Then the Kirk of Scotland gets its knickers in a knot about that. So that's all these ripple effects. So rather than saying to yourself, well, what can I do to solve this? I could speak to the croppers and bring them in, and they could work as a cooperative, or they
indeed.
Could work with, no, let's just blame them, call them Luddites, say they're thugs, say they're hooligans, send in the militia.
And that's
what happened to them.
Mary, fascinating. Can I end with a little story, something that happened to me a long, long time ago?
Okay.
But I feel that what you've just talked about has taken me on a tour of a mill. I can smell the oily material and so on. I feel like I've been there. Who needs AI? In Manchester, there is it's the Museum or Centre for Science and Industry.
Yeah.
And when I worked with groups from Germany, half day, I would take them on a tour. And we'd go around and see the development, you know, because they were now in industry fear, as they call it, the new technological revolution.
Yeah.
But go back to the days of the industrial revolution. And one day I'm with a group of, say, 9 or 10, and I'm doing a bit of odd vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to them, does anyone know the name for all these little bits of thread that are found at the bottom of the machines and swept up at the end of the day? No one knew. And I said, that's called THRUM. No, I knew quite well that would never come up in a business meeting, but THRUM. And a tour guide who had been, I later found out, a machine operator, but was now wearing a uniform being probably thinking about the good old days, said to me, no, son, that's called THRAM.
Ah, there you are, you see.
And then, of course, I didn't feel embarrassed. I thought, I've learned something here.
Yes.
What I call THRUM, he calls THRAM.
Absolutely, yes.
And quite right, too.
Absolutely. Well, the mills had an entire vocabulary of their own.
It's an entire vocabulary. It's wonderful. Mary, thank you very much. Fascinating, that whole story. Have we done it justice?
I hope so. I hope if we haven't told the entire story, we've piqued people's interest to go and find out a bit some more.
I hope so.
Some digging themselves.
Do we have to sew more threads? I don't know. Let's think about it.
We'll think about it.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's great. Okay.
Yeah. Bye for now.
Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.